Are you ready, Steve? Andy? Yeah! Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, 29th day of July, 2011. The Dow is down 61, the S&P is down 3, the gold up 11. How about that?
Nice.
You got a number on gold? Gold is 1626.30. Nice, up $10.
Yeah, 26.6 right now. Yeah.
So the difference between the long version and the short version of the opening intro
is that I was wondering
you,
what
is
it was.
That, is that once you combine it all into a master file, there no longer is a short version. So
okay.
I realized that once hit the button. So, I mean, there is another file somewhere, but anyway. All right. Well, folks, don't worry. Be happy, as Bobby McFerrin would say. Debt crisis, they're going to fix it. Here's what's really interesting. The United States has 74 billion and change in the bank. Apple has 76 billion in the bank. So, I mean, we joked yesterday about China putting the U.S. on eBay. I don't know. Apple's got more money than America. So, maybe Steve Jobs will loan us some cash. I don't know. Maybe that fixes the problem. I just don't know. But the president seemed very confident today when he spoke. And he actually made good sense, I thought. He said, some things we can't control. You know, hurricanes, terrorists, whatever else he said. He goes, but this, the solution's in our hands. We just have to do it. So I'm sure a lot of us are not going to like the solution, whatever that solution ends up being. but at least it's going to be a solution. And then we can go back to solving all of the problems that we have. I mean, the nation's attention has really been sidetracked. Our congressional leaders, everyone, this has been, I don't know. Anyway, it'll be over. Trust me, it'll be over by August 2nd, or before August 2nd. Because we're not going to default, and we're not going to do all that stuff, and people are going to still get their Social Security checks, and the military is going to get paid. Trust me. I'm fairly confident of that. All right, moving right along. What were you talking about when I so rudely interrupted you?
What was I talking about? I was just talking about the naked MA1 trades that were available right there on your chart that everybody could see. Possible short opportunity from right about 1296 on the naked MA1. And another one that just came up a minute ago at about 1294, right in that range. One thing that we can go over, I mean, there's a ton of things that we can go over from the morning session. But,
a lot has happened since. Senator Harry Reid is speaking right now, guys. So if you're in a trade, there's no telling what this man might say. And there she goes. She's diving. As soon as this guy opens his mouth, look at this thing go. I'm not picking on him. I'm just saying these are volatile times.
They are volatile times.
So just whenever these guys get on TV and start talking about this stuff live, it's going to have an effect on the markets. Last night in the workshop, we saw a huge move unfold, and I don't think anybody was speaking, or they said they hadn't. They announced they hadn't reached a resolution, right? Is that what it was?
Something to that effect, I think.
But it created a big old.
Yeah, it just went. It was immediate sideways movement. Remember it just completely went sideways for a long period, and it was all within about 5 or 6 seconds. It was sideways, and then it just started jumping around. And the reason it looked like it did on the charts was because there was no liquidity in the market at the time. You know, we were looking at the Russell at the time, but there was no liquidity in the market at the time. So one trade had a spread of, you know, I don't know, six ticks or something like that. So on the chart, that just looks like a straight move down. On a range chart anyway. But yeah, it was interesting to watch though. You know, when we were in the middle, we actually recorded it because when we were doing the workshop, we had the live charts on.
We did.
And we actually recorded the movement. So anyone that's a partner, you'll be able to see it.
Now, last night on the blog, guys, I just cracked myself up. Deal or no deal? Where is Howie when we need him? Oh, that's right. America's got talent, not cash. But Apple's got
cash.
That's
right.
Okay, so this was the chart. This was real time when I posted this last night. The white candle had printed, and we'd had a 6.75... point, how about I say 6.75 point drop. Well, that became this. So there was a lot more than 6.75. It went from 99 down to, was it 79? I believe it was. And so it's about a 20-point move off of this white candle. But now look what happened here. We were blue, we were white, we were red. Over here, we're white, and we got a red candle pulling back to a blue MA1. So I'm not jumping on this based on the hourly. I'm just gonna watch. We've got another in 13 minutes. We'll get a new candle. We'll see what happens. See what that looks like.
I wanted to point out something. You know, when you brought this up, from that candle right there, that white candle in the room this morning, we pointed out that white candle was not that one. The one that happened this morning.
Mm-hmm.
We pointed out that white candle was forming, and I didn't further the issue because I was actively trading everything else that was going on. But when you had that, if we would have jumped over like we train everyone to in the live trading room and all the partners, if you would have jumped over to a smaller time frame, say a 10,000 contract, we had an opportunity to get long there all the way back at 84.75 or 85, and that made a 15-point move from there. If you look at the actual timing of it all, right there after the bullish cross, it was about 10.03 my time, so it would have been about 9.03 year on your charts, right over there.
Right there.
Right in there was our long opportunity, and that went all the way up to 1,300. So a 15-point move right there, using the candles and the methods that we've taught in the live trading room and in the workshops. Particularly in the workshops, we spent we spent more time with that in the workshops.
This last move right here, guys, this last little pullback, this is our classic entry. 1293 ran to 1300. That's a 7-point move up. Then we get a reversal. Everything sets up in the opposite direction. You get a short at 1296, and it's dropped 5 points back to 91. This is great volatility. I mean, it's just trading in a market like this is like, it's kind of fun. I mean, we had a move here that was 60 points this morning or more.
Yep.
On the YM. Then it flips around, and in the other direction, the pullback was to 12,150, and we drop off to 12,105, so 45-point move down.
Those two moves alone equaled all my Russell trades. 100 points there was equal to my 50, or 100 ticks there. 100 points in the YM was equal to my 50 ticks that I made in the Russell this morning. So that's interesting.
Do you want to go over some of those trades, or do you want the charts? You want to point some of them out, or not, or?
I don't think I can have the charts right now. I guess.
I just made you an organizer.
No, you didn't make me an organizer.
I made somebody named Mike an organizer.
Oh, it says I'm an organizer. Let's see. Do I have? Yeah. Okay. There we go. I do have them. All right. I can point some of them out if you want.
I mean, it's up to you.
Let me grab the charts and I'll point out what I was talking about with.
We did have a spectacular morning in the live trading room, so that'd be a good time to point it out, I guess.
Okay, I will point it out.
I looked over my other screen. I don't see your chart.
All right.
Oh, there they are.
They should be coming up right now.
There they go.
All right. Hang on a second. Let me get this out of here. All right. First, let me show you what I was talking about here on the ES. All right. The 1 hour. Okay, this was the white candle right here. All right, and after that white candle finished painting, I drew a line where it was, okay, and the time that it was happening. So now if I change this same chart back to a 10,000 contract, and we flip over here and we scroll back to where I drew that arrow, there's the arrow. So that's got the time, and it's got the area where that candle closed, all right? So the market was drawing down at the time, and just let it go down. You start looking for buying opportunities. The first buying opportunity was right here, okay? You got your bullish cross, your pullback. That was your first buying opportunity right there at 85. And you can see it didn't go straight up. It pulled back down. It went up pretty well, and then it came back down, went up 5 points, and it pulled back down to 85.75. Then it went up another 10 points right here, 10 plus points. That was the move that I was talking about. Now, let's jump over to the Russell. Okay, I'm going to minimize it because there were so many trades. The ones in white are the trades I actually took. The ones in orange are the trades I missed. But you can see, this is, David would call this nano trading. But there were a lot of opportunities. And, where's my dumb? Here's my DOM, plus 50 ticks on the morning per contract. All right. We started out here. We just took the short off the elbow break. We took a continuation short. Well, I missed this short, but we took a continuation short here. And we got a chunk of that. And we missed the next one over here. We took this one, we missed this one, took this one and this one, and missed that one and that one. We had a losing trade in here somewhere. Yeah, we took this one, which won. We took that one that won. We lost a little bit on this one. I think we lost 5 ticks on that one. When the chop bands went inside down here. Okay, we missed that one. We took that one. We took that one and that one and that one. And we missed that one and that one. We missed this one that lost. We missed that one and that one that won. We missed this one that lost. This would have been a break even. We took this one and this one and this one. Now, let me just point out, I know this is a ton of trades and you don't have to take all these trades. And, you know, after the first half an hour, I think I was up 18 or 20 ticks, something like that. And on any given day, if in a half an hour trading, you can be up 18 or 20 ticks, you know, that's the equivalent of, about 4 points on the ES. If your goal is met at that point, then you should just stop trading. Okay. I continue trading, because it's a training room. And I, you know, I can't just stop trading, and everybody that comes in at 35 minutes into the market, I can't say, oh, well, I've met my goal for the day, so I'm not going to trade anymore. That's, you know, that's not the way we work. But I wanted to point out there were so many opportunities. You could have come in at pretty much any time this morning and had gotten your goal. You know, every one of these trades is more than a point on the ES. Some of them are many points on the ES. The actual setup is pretty simple. You know, over here, when the elbow breaks, this little thing right here, this red, the solid red and blue line is the elbow. This other curved red and blue line is the MA1. That's for the continuation trades. The other thing is the elbow. The dotted line is the elbow extension. When price gets above the elbow like this, breaks above the elbow, you just look for a close above that, and that's where you enter on the long side. Okay? And just stick it out. On the continuation trades, when price closes above, and I'll blow this up a little bit for you so you can see it a little closer. When price closes above the elbow, price closes above the elbow and you look for a close above that close, which was right here. All right. So that's where you enter. And you can see in these right here, it worked out well. I only risk about, well, I never risk any more than 6 ticks on any of these trades. 6 ticks on the Russell is $60. All right. I just wanted to show you guys all this stuff that we had here. And, you know, anybody that's in here right now, let me see, hang on a second. Anyone who's in here right now who's a partner that was not in the training last night, we should have the recording of the workshop last night out on the website in the members area, hopefully by the end of the day today. And it's we introduced some new ways of looking at things last night. It's definitely worth watching. Okay, a couple different ways of looking at things that we already have, and I illustrated that today a little bit on the gold market with the Burt. I was showing him earlier on. Let me just back this up. I think over here. Yeah, right over here was a short on gold. It was a long, another long, a short, a short. And over here was a long on gold for that move up. Over here was a long on gold for that move up. Over here was a short on gold for a little move down. This was a long that didn't work out. This was a long that had a little bit of a move, a short that had a nice move. And that's all from this morning. So what we were doing last night in the workshop, I think is beneficial for everyone to see. Now, anybody that's in here that's had the trial in the past, honestly, guys, you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't really consider this stuff. If you want to trade, then it's right here in front of you. Okay.
Tools are there. If you want to trade. And all the videos, we completed workshop number 20 last night. And so as a partner, yeah, you have, you know, full access to the entire video library. And each workshop has run at least an hour and a half. So that's about 30 hours minimum of video content and training, walking you through everything. So if you've taken the free trial in the past and you weren't able to make it, or you failed to pay attention, or it just didn't click, no, you didn't get it, then shoot an email over to secondchance@cfrn.net, S-E-C-O-N-D, chance@cfrn.net, or call Dwayne, not me, the other Dwayne, Dwayne S., his phone number's on the website. So give him a call and say, you know, I did the free trial, whatever, and then he'll let me know, and I'll enable you to come back in and, you know, have another look, you know, if you want to take a serious look. If that's really what you want to do. I mean, if you're already trading and you're already successful, you know, we're not looking to help you put an edge on your edge, because if you're already successful, then you should do what you do. If you're not successful yet, or if you're struggling, or if you have issues, if you want some help, if you want to learn, then that's what we're here for.
You know? Yep. I don't want to spend a whole bunch of time. It's 12:30 already, so I just wanted to point out here, in the trades that I took, I made 50 ticks this morning. In the trades that I missed a net of at least 72 ticks this morning, all right, in the setups that were there. So, I mean, you guys can do the math, but that's, you know, over $1,200 per contract. So if you,
hey Dell,
two or three contracts.
I see your message, and I will give you a call, and yeah.
All right. That's it, guys. Right here, you know, this was the end of our morning session right here. There was a short trade right in there. That was followed up by a continuation trade right there. And another one right there, and another one right there, and there was another one right in here. I'd have to blow it up to see if that actually made it 9.6, and it pulled back to 6.0. That one worked out too. Had a lot of chop in there, but it worked out, and then broke the elbow again over here, giving you more opportunity. Looks like this one here would have lost. This one over here would have won, and you're in chop in here. And right in here, you would have been looking to go long. All right, you'd be looking to go long again right now, as a matter of fact, as it's starting to close up above the MA1. Actually, the chop bands are suggesting that we have chop right here, so you'd want to stay out of that. All right, but that's it, guys. And this is really two indicators on the charts. Okay, there's the MA1 and the elbow. It's not hard to do. It's pretty easy to follow. You have to be quick this morning, but you don't have to do it in this time frame. This is a 3-tick range, and you don't even have to do the Russell. You could do this with other markets too. But if you become a partner and you watch the videos that are in the members area, particularly the one we did last night, then you'll see different ways to do things with the minimum number of indicators. Like, you know, in this particular instance right here, if we replace the elbow indicator with the sentiment indicator, you would have trade opportunities. A lot of trade opportunities with minimal risk, and the type of trade opportunities that you want to let ride out, you know, with like 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 risk reward ratios. You know, we're minimum risk, no more than 6 ticks. And you know, you can look for a point, 2 points on the trades that that are generated from that.
Now here's the deal, guys. Even with these wonderful tools and our wonderful tutelage on all of our videos, you still have to learn how to trade. So
yes.
if you come to us thinking, well, you know what, I really don't want to go through all that trouble of learning how to trade, so I'm just going to go over here and do this CFRN partner thing and just make a lot of money, that, you know, I'm just telling you, not that I don't want you to, you know, sign up, send your money before midnight tonight and we get it sooner. You know, I'm not trying to discourage you from becoming a partner. I just want you to come in with realistic expectations. Okay? We'll give you great tools, teach you how to use the tools, but you still got to learn how to trade. And you've also got to learn how to deal with losing trades, getting stopped out, getting back up again, dusting yourself off, going right back at it. I mean, there's much more to trading than a set of indicators. having good tools, having a really good indicator set, and having someone teach you how to really use them, well, that is an awesome thing. But that's only one part of the equation.
Yep. It's just a piece of it.
We help you with the other part. We help you with the psychology. We talk about it. We show it to you live in real time. You get to come into the trading room every day and not just see us knock it out of the park. You get to come into the live trading room every day and see us get stopped out. Sometimes over and over. Because
yeah,
guess what?
Unfortunately.
Because that's the truth about trading. See? So, anyway.
All right.
That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
That is it. That's all there is to it, guys. I mean, you know, I didn't have a great day on Monday. I didn't have a great day on Tuesday. Wednesday was okay. Yesterday was good. Yesterday was much better. Today was great. I had a very nice day today. And you know, you're not gonna have a banner day every day. And you have to know that from the start. You have to expect that from the start. That every day is not going to be, you know, plus 50 ticks or whatever the case may be. All right. You see, there was just another short opportunity right here. Right in here. I'll draw a little arrow on it. Now, the yellow arrows are trades that I actually take, so I always make the ones that I don't take orange. All right. So in hindsight, I can see when I go back at the end of the day, I look at the trades that I took and just to make sure that I had good reason for them. I can see which ones I actually took. The chop bands, when the red is inside the black, it indicates that you're in chop and you might not want to take the trade. Like right here, where we had a trade set up, right here, the bands were inside. It indicated we were in chop and we might not want to take the trade. It's as simple as that. It's not complicated at all. And we showed another way to use the chop bands last night in the workshop. So I think that's definitely worth a look too, guys. Alright. Alright. That's it. It is 12:35.
Time to go to Vegas.
Yep.
Alright, guys. It's at this point in our daily programming that we take a short break. Tell you who we are and then come back with Mr. Las Vegas.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Dwayne. How are you?
Very good, sir.
Thank you. Michael, how are you?
I am well, David. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Well, another week, a lot of volatility starting,
yes,
or more volatility starting to appear in the market, which is very nice to see.
Big volatility.
big volatility. The gap down and a lot of other things happening in other markets as well. We could make a case for the remainder of the year potentially having quite a bit of volatility. But I think I mentioned yesterday that I am hoping anyway that the year 2012 will be the year that we'll most likely see a pretty good, if we don't see it before, a pretty good increase in volatility for the S&P. So many people have switched over to the foreign currencies, the euro, trading the pairs, and on,
mm-hmm,
because the volatility really is there. They're wonderful markets. There's no question about them, and they trade 24 hours a day, and you know there's a it's hard to argue with them. The S&P still does have really good opportunities. Michael is just going over some of them throughout the day for whatever style of your trading, whether it's so-called nano trading or longer term. There's still quite a few opportunities in a given week, where in the old days there might be, at least for us, there might be, you know, three good opportunities in a day. Now sometimes there's one or two, but there is still plenty of opportunities in a given week. And sometimes there's longer, you know, larger multi-day opportunities in the S&P as well, where you can really set up a good trade. So, Dwayne, what do you think of all this? What's your take on I'm sure you've already gone over it, but let's just bore him and tell me again a little bit.
Like
politically it. or the market-wise or however you want to view
well,
it.
Well, the most interesting thing I said all day is that Apple has more money in the bank than the United States.
That is great. Boy, they really, you know, when you have more money than the United States, that's, even now, that's still saying quite a bit.
The United States has $74 billion in the bank, and Apple has like 76.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, I don't even know how to put that in proper perspective. I mean, it's, well, it, you know what, and the story is even bigger than that, because the U.S. government has $74 billion in the bank, but they've got all this debt on their back.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, I think Apple, their money in the bank, that's kind of like free and clear. I mean, I'm sure they owe a few, you know, Chinese manufacturers that make their handsets, and they got to make payroll this week like any other company. So they have some debt, some liabilities, but I don't think it's trillions of dollars.
No. The United States and Apple are, of course, two different, entirely different concerns. The United States, obviously, is a government. It's very, very different. But we make up 25% of the world's GDP. You know, that's really big. And I don't know what the actual peak was or if that's still the absolute number. But at one point, if it's not now, at one point we did make up 25%, as I understand it, of the world's GDP. So that's a really substantial thing. And of course, China is going to, you know, China, there's a lot of things happening in China. That's a really, really big wave. It's going to take a long time, but they're really on the move. And they will be able to challenge that at some point. And a person could say, is it really important for us to be the big superpower and to have the biggest economy? And is that always the right thing to do? Well, the fact is that it was just the natural thing for America. We didn't go out to try to be the biggest country or the biggest superpower. What we were doing was letting the American people and industry and business and entrepreneurs and every kind of person do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out that our culture and capitalism worked hand in hand to produce this superpower, which will someday crumble. Unfortunately, they all do. But these are really, really long waves that we're talking about. And I don't mean to say that to cause any shock. I really don't. But all of this stuff goes on, you know, for long periods of time, meaning countries, and at some point, large recessions and, you know, big wipeouts happen. And, you know, that's just life, how it goes. But I've often thought to myself, is it really that important for us to be the biggest and the best in everything? And it's a nice idea to be that. And it's really nice that we got there without actually sitting in a room and saying, we're going to try to be the biggest superpower. We're going to be
the biggest
economic engine.
We're not here to take
engine.
Over the world. Right.
We didn't do that.
Yeah.
We just ended up being that way.
Right.
And we did that because of the ingenuity and the foresight and vision of any number of millions of people. So, you know, we're at a point now where we're making these decisions about our future, and, you know, everyone in their heart of hearts, hopefully, anyway, I'm not a conspiracy person, but I believe that everyone, including Obama, wants the best for America, that he doesn't want to destroy the country and, you know, tear it down or whatever. And it's just a matter of fact, though, that there's very differing views on how to get there. There also may be, I'm going to give a concession here, although I don't know the real, I don't have a firm understanding of government. I mean, I have to say that I don't. I look at, you know, a family that's spending too much money and has an income but spends too much money, and I find out that the family's in bankruptcy or very close to bankruptcy, my first response would be, well, you guys have to cut all unnecessary expenditures. That's first, right out of the box. And the reason I would say that is for the reason that everybody would say that. That's the first thing anybody would say is, you know, if you're teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, you got to cut all unnecessary expenditures. You can't go to the movies. You can't take that vacation. You can't buy the new TV. You have to cut back on these expenditures, and you have to be very efficient with the money that you do have coming in. If you can increase the money coming in, that would be nice. But what's the first thing people are going to say? They're going to say, cut your spending. Mm-hmm. So between the two parties, and we're a lot closer apparently than we were before, so if there isn't already an agreement, I think there may be an agreement already. I wasn't watching the news today, sorry.
No, but the president said that there's not one yet. But he's confident.
Not one yet. Okay.
But he's confident that there will be.
Okay. You know, there's good people on both sides. I like the moderates the best. I actually like several Democrats that are just ordinary, plain old moderate people. And the same thing with the Republicans as well. And I think the moderates amongst themselves could very easily put a deal together. And I also want to tip my hat to Bill Clinton, who was really, really good at stepping in between and really showing leadership and really getting the two sides to work together. Those of you who were around during his presidency, Republican or Democrat, he was really good at working the both sides of the aisle and making deals happen and stuff like that. This current president is not really good at almost anything, as far as I'm concerned. In fact, he's really bad at a number of things. One of them is leadership, and that's one of the reasons that these two parties are so distinctly far apart.
I think he's got a pretty good jump shot.
What's that?
They say he's got a pretty good jump shot.
He may have a really good jump shot. And he also is really good at looking relaxed and calm. I almost would like to see him look concerned because things are at a critical juncture, so to speak. I'd like to see some concern on his face. It kind of bothers me that he always shows such cool and calm. It's almost as if that's just a habit, you know, to show that. I'd like to see a little more concern on his face about and in his demeanor about all this. But either way, my point was that in a family situation, you would think, you know, you have to cut your expenses. And that's the side that I initially lean on as well. Don't we have to stop wasting money? Don't we have millions or perhaps billions of dollars of worthless money going out to anything from, you know, ridiculous grants all the way over to, you know, double, triple, quadruple programs that are in the government that are just doubling the money that we're spending on a single idea that, you know, isn't working.
We built a bridge
on and on and on.
For turtles.
You guys have seen all that stuff.
We built a bridge for turtles.
We did. One of the problems with starting a program.
Nothing against turtles. Nothing. I love turtles.
What's that?
I said I love turtles. I don't want anybody to think I'm anti-turtle.
No, I'm not
anti-turtle either.
Champion
the cause of the turtle. But we spent millions of dollars to build them some kind of a bridge.
Yeah. No, I know. There's just so much of that, and there's so much waste going on, and it's so difficult once you start a program. This is the problem. Once you start a program, it's like a cancer. You just cannot kill the silly thing. There's so many forces at work that want to keep that program running. It's like, you know, what is the first job of a bureaucracy? It's just to stay alive, to keep it going, to keep itself going. All the other tasks that it's been set up to possibly do, like, you know, help this person or help that, that's secondary. Its first job is to keep itself alive. And that's fine. Fair enough. But that's why you have to think long and hard about starting new programs and, you know, throwing money around, because after a while it starts to really add up. And we're at a point now where I'm not even sure that the money they're talking about cutting is really talking about cutting our current spending. Somebody would have to explain this to me. It's possible that the money they're talking about cutting is actually money that we were planning on spending but haven't even spent yet. In other words, a future plan for future expansion we're cutting back on of the dollar amount that we're spending. I'm not sure that we're actually talking about cutting the amount we're actually spending. We may be actually talking about money that we were going to spend over and above the amount that we're already spending. I would have thought that that would be like the family thing where somebody comes in and says, well, you got to cut back on your spending. And instead of cutting back on what they're currently actually spending, they just cut back plans on buying that Porsche and that large TV and some other things, but they're not going to cut their current spending. I don't know. Somebody would have to explain it to me.
Well, the president
are we talking about cutting actual dollars that we're now spending, or are we talking about simply cutting back on the plans for spending future money that we had plans for over and above the money we're already spending? Maybe one of the listeners could tell me what the hell this cut is really cutting. Because I don't know.
What the president said this morning was that this has nothing to do with future spending. We need to raise the debt ceiling to pay the bills.
For previous bills. But that's not my question. My question is about the cutting that they're talking about doing. Cutting is part of this deal. Raise the debt limit, cut spending, and possibly raise taxes. My question is, on the portion of that deal where we're talking about cutting spending, are we talking about cutting the actual spending that we're already in the works, or are we talking about simply cutting back on the plan to spend even more money later? Plans for the new Porsche, for the new, you know, house, for the new this. Are we just going to say, well, we're going to cut those back, or are we cutting the actual current spending? That's what I don't know.
No,
because it would be just
teachers.
Like our politicians to say, well, yeah, we cut $4 trillion out of the debt. Well, but it would be just like them to find out later, no, we didn't cut $4 trillion out of what we're actually spending. We just tailored back $4 trillion of what we were going to spend on top of what we're already spending. See? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that that's the case. I don't know. That just idea struck me as we were talking.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're talking about. Bill says it well in government speak. If you were planning on spending $100, but you haven't spent it yet, and you decide to only spend $90 in the future, then government counts that as a reduction. So,
What I'm saying. Is that the kind of reduction we're talking? Because I would certainly think, after all the heat that this has gone on, that we'd be talking about what we're spending right now has to be cut back. Forget any future spending. We have to cut back on our current expenditures, just like a family would in a situation like this. And I'm just waiting to find out that it has nothing to do with what we're currently spending. It actually has to do with cutting what we were even planning on spending over and above what we're currently spending. And if that's the case, it's just about as meaningless as, you know, could be, because it's our current expenditures that are already hurting us. We're already upside down. But either way, you know, we'll just have to manage through it. A lot of people who have run for government, who have big business experience, running businesses, understanding how to cut waste, et cetera, they never make it into office. For some reason, we don't see that. Now, Ronald Reagan wasn't a businessman, but he did treat government more like a businessman because he was into cutting waste and really, you know, getting back, and he did raise and lower taxes dramatically. He lowered them dramatically, actually, and raised them a couple of times as well to pay for various programs. But the people that run that are business people, you know, we've seen this in the past with a number of these guys, they never get into office for one reason or another. And I'm not sure why that is, but we do have some people. Mitt Romney is a businessman, and he may have a chance to get into office or be the Republican nominee. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't it feel good? I mean, is it just me, or wouldn't it feel good to know that there's somebody who really does understand that no matter if you're a family or you're the government, you have to manage your expenses. You just can't spend like a drunk sailor and then turn to the people and just, you know, ask and tax them and et cetera. That doesn't work. It only works it will work for a while, but then it finally doesn't work. And I would sure feel good to have somebody in there that understood, Democrat or Republican. I'm very happy to have a Democrat in office. I really am. Just not one as far left-leaning as this one. And just not one that has no leadership qualities like this one. You know, this one looks good on TV, talks a good game, but is, you know, you could make an argument you could make a several arguments that he's in so far over his head that his only trick is to look good on TV and to talk a good game. So, you know, the Republicans have their problems on their side as well, but I think everybody would agree we want to get out of this mess. We want to do it, and I will say again, I believe that both sides really do have probably the best interests of America at heart. They just have dramatically different ways, in many cases, of seeing how that gets done. On one side, we want to cut. That's Republicans. On the other side, they want to tax people more right now, and they want to spend a whole bunch more. Because, you know, if they had their way and there was no resistance, I mean, there's no question about it, we'd be inching in on $20 trillion. We've already added $4 trillion in new spending in just 2 years. That's more debt than the entire combined history of American presidents put together in one term. That's a lot. That's what causes people concern, obviously. It's too much money. And if he had no resistance, he would have already doubled down on the stimulus package, would have been another trillion or two there. Now we're at $16 trillion. He would have already signed us up for, you know, $10 trillion more in new spending. God knows what it would have been if he had no resistance. So there's something, there really is a very, very big divide between the idea that you have to manage your finances and the idea that spending money and big government solves all problems. That's the other thing. Our government is 30% or some close number to 30% bigger than it was. That's just part of, you know, this particular administration's policy, that they want big government. So a lot of different viewpoints on how it all gets put together. And don't be mad at me. You know, I am conservative. I am for smaller government. I like the idea of less government intrusion. I like regulation where regulation is practical and is needed. I like people to pay reasonable taxes. I don't like seeing the rich get punished because they were successful. This is a capitalist society. I don't like, you know, there's all these things that go on, and I would just like to have the government get out of our way. And I think anybody would agree, or most people would, I hope they would, that one of the problems that we're facing right now is that businesses can't make any kind of plan to invest capital because they never know what this guy's going to come up with next. What's the next trick? You know, what's the next thing that you're going to do? Well, we have to do this now. Well, we have to raise this. Well, we have to change this. You know, there's so much uncertainty out there that very few people are willing to place a big bet, so to speak, right now. And that has to be solved at some point here. I hope it's solved in the next election, but I hope it's solved earlier than that so we can see a reversal here. We did see the jobs number looked a little better this week, you know, 390 plus thousand or whatever people filed for unemployment.
Right.
You know, that's a little less, 30,000 less or so. So,
well,
there you are, Dwayne.
You got a lot of people out there who, you know, oh, we talked about it yesterday. I don't know if it's when you were on or not, but there's a guy holding job fairs for $11 an hour jobs, and he can't hire people. And you go, wait a minute, there's this huge unemployment problem. How is it not possible that you hire people with an $11 an hour job? I realize that doesn't make you rich, but it puts food on your table. And the guy goes, because they keep extending the unemployment benefits, and so if a person can make $11 or close to it staying home, as opposed to getting up and going to work, then they're just going to stay home. And that's just counterproductive. Brad, type this in. I'll share this, and then we'll go straight to the markets, guys. Brad says, it's called the haircut. One day a florist went to a barber for a haircut. After the cut, he asked about his bill, and the barber replied, I cannot accept money from you. I'm doing community service this week. The florist was pleased and left the shop. When the barber went to open his shop the next morning, there was a thank you card and a dozen roses waiting for him at his door. Later, a cop comes in for a haircut. And when he tries to pay his bill, the barber again replies, I cannot accept money from you. I'm doing community service this week. The cop was happy and left the shop. The next morning when the barber went to open up, there was a thank you card and a dozen donuts waiting for him at his door. Then a congressman came in for a haircut. And he went to pay his bill. The barber again replied, I cannot accept money. I'm doing community service this week. The congressman was very happy and left the shop. The next morning, when the barber went to open up, there were a dozen congressmen lined up waiting for a free haircut. And that, my friends, illustrates fundamental difference between the citizens of our country and the politicians who run it.
That's well said. Well, that's a great story. One other thing I would like to mention is that as those unemployment rolls continue to grow, those people who are getting that money and who for a certain period of time certainly deserve it, that's a safety net, obviously. But as that continues to grow and we can continue to continue to expand the amount of time that they're on it, that's going to turn into 20 or 30 million people that are going to want to vote a certain way. Because you could argue that, you know, that's not going to go away between now and the election. They're just going to keep extending. You watch. They're going to just keep extending it. Because that's going to become a body. That's a lot of people that are getting checks from the government. Who do you think they're going to vote for?
Okay. All right. Well, here's what we're going to do. Because I get so aggravated by this guy. James Kemper.
Oh.
I'm going to actually, incidentally, you know nothing about me. Okay. So, incidentally, Dwayne, I know you will not relay any of my messages to David. Sure, I will. Here you go, David. You ready? James Kemper says, David seems to think that having the rich pay any taxes is punishment to them. Prior to that, let's see, don't suppose the spending David is speaking of is the result of George Bush's unnecessary and various programs. Let's see, prior to that, scrolling. What about that unfair suggestion that everybody pay their fair share of taxes, including corporations and oil companies? And, gee, I think that was it. That's all the vitriol.
Well, I'm all for James' sakes, I'm all for everybody paying taxes, and I'm all for the rich paying more taxes than the middle class or the poor. I don't mind if you're asking me, I don't mind the sliding scale at all. My complaint is that this is no time to raise taxes on anybody, because both the rich, middle class, and even poor all took hits of equal proportion. The rich who own houses and shopping centers, all those houses and shopping centers are three quarters empty in some cases, and they're either losing them or they're way upside down. The value of those is gone, their income stream has gone away, etc. I'm really referring to, it's not a punishment to have the rich pay taxes. I pay taxes. I'm not putting myself into the rich category, but I have a higher income than the middle class, let's just say. So I pay taxes on my, and I'm very happy to pay them. I'm very happy to send a check to the government. But this is not a good time, in my opinion, to raise taxes on anybody, whether they're rich, middle class, or poor. The punishment I'm referring to isn't punishment that they are paying taxes or that they owe taxes. I want to make my point very clear. It's to now, at this point, when everyone, all of us collectively have taken such a big hit, to now raise taxes and to do it to the rich. That's what I'm objecting to. Not that the rich pay taxes, not that corporations, and I'm not for big oil companies having big tax breaks that they don't need because they're making plenty of money. I completely agree with anybody who would make that statement. I would like to point out to you that under this administration, he's had the reins for 2 years. Those oil companies still have all of those big tax breaks, don't they? They still have them. Not one of them's been taken away yet, as I understand. So although he may talk a good game, I'm talking about the president now, about, you know, that's what he wants to do, the fat cats and this and that and the other thing. I don't like the way the guy splits us all up. We're all just people, and America's all about doing the very best you can and seeing if you can improve your lifestyle. That's what the program here is. It's not a socialistic program. I am totally okay with people paying taxes and happily pay my own. I just don't think it's a good time to raise taxes and to point to one group of people and say, well, we're going to raise it on you. And the reason I call it punishment, James, is because the total amount of money he would get is nothing compared to the amount that they have, it's meaningless practically in the scale of things. It only is punitive. It's really just a punitive thing that I, in my opinion, that he's doing. He does not like successful, you can ask anybody who's in business, they don't feel good about this guy's attitude towards people who are successful.
Now, you know, everybody wants to rail on the rich, but Dell makes a really good point, you know, and I don't know why people don't. 40% of Americans, let me say it one more time, 40% of Americans pay the most taxes. No. 40% of Americans pay no tax. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
When they file their federal income tax every year, 40% of Americans pay no tax. And they aren't the rich people. Okay? They're the they're the quote-unquote underprivileged, the people getting entitlements. I know people who get more back than they paid in. And I shake my head and I'm like, wait a minute. That doesn't even, how is that even possible?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? 40%, everybody talks about, well, you know, the rich, you know, they don't pay their fair share. Okay, whatever. There's a very complicated tax code in this country that I completely disagree with, and I think it should be abolished.
As do I.
Away with,
as do I.
And there should be some very simplified way of dealing with this issue. But 40% of Americans pay no federal income tax, and it's not because they're rich.
Right. So we're almost at the 50% mark of people not paying taxes. And it is true that there are all kinds of very sophisticated loopholes for people to get through. Those are in the tax code, and those people are going to take advantage of those since they're there. And they're in the tax code because it was legislated in by both Democrats and Republicans, who many times in their own cases are rich. And they are trying to put loopholes in for people like themselves so they don't have to pay income tax. But I'm not into hating any group or being mad at any group, but I think our president is punitive against people who have had success, and it bothers him. It bothers me when oil companies get subsidies that they don't need anymore, or any corporation does. That needs to stop. But at the same time, you know what? Our tax code, like you said, is enormously complex. These people have the money to go out and pay to have their taxes reduced. But like you said, 40% of America doesn't pay a dime in taxes. And you don't hear a lot of people complaining about that. Many of the 40% that don't pay a dime in taxes, in probably, are employed by people who run small businesses and are trying to make a living. And, you know, the new rich is the guy that grosses $250,000 a year. You know, and a lot of small businesses do that. And that's not rich.
And by the way, James says, as a former IRS attorney, he completely disagrees with your conclusions. So, I don't know.
Oh, well.
I think we should go to the markets.
We should go to the markets. Well, it is, no, and listen, if these are my conclusions, these are my opinions about things, you know, we're talking about them here. There may be some facts that I'm not aware of or something like that, but from my perspective, I'm not sure specifically which point he's referring to, but from my perspective, I don't think, and my big point about taxes is that I don't think they should be raised on anybody right now. This is not a good time to raise taxes on people when, you know, everyone is hurting. And so that's my big point about taxes, James. Not that we pay them, not that there is a graduated scale and, you know, all that stuff. Just that this isn't a good time to raise them. That's my whole big deal.
The year,
well,
the best year I ever had, the year that I paid the federal government, I've said this on the show before, and I don't say it to, you know, be boastful of any kind, but the year that I had to pay the federal government $80,000-something, I was absolutely ecstatic because I was doing my part. I had a good year. Life was good. You know, the economy was good. Things were cooking along, and I did not resent one dime of that money. Not at all. It's just like you said, you whatever you owe, you pay it. You pay it because you made something, right?
Right.
And you should be taxed fairly. We should all be taxed fairly. We, you know, equal representation, equal taxation. I think that had something to do with this whole country, the way it got started, you know? Taxation without representation, or however that thing went. So I just think we should just all get along.
That's right. Can't we all just get along?
Just love one another. Because we're never going to all agree, but you know what? We can disagree in the spirit of, you know, disagreeing, I guess.
Well, there you are. Let's do this in the spirit of disagreement.
All right.
Okay, let's take a look at the markets. We have some good things happen today, some unusual and good things happen today. You want to start with the S&P?
Sure.
We'll take a look at that. First of all, somebody yesterday, I don't know who it was, asked this question, And I don't know if they were asking it at the time with the idea that they felt it was going to happen, but it did happen. They asked, I guess they asked me the question, was the, you know, at that time the market had rallied up and we had done the 1313 that we talked about, and they started moving sideways to down, and they said, would you expect another retest of the lows or mm-hmm. a break to 95 or something like that? And I said, I don't have any forecast for that right now. And then subsequent to that, the market, in fact, did break to new lows yesterday.
Yep.
And so if that person was asking that question because they had some insight into the market, sometimes people will do that, you know, they won't come right out and say the market's going to do this. They may have an insight that it's going to and say, do you think this is going to happen, or in some way lay it out there.
The reason he asked the question is because he was long.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if he was asking that question because he had an insight into the fact that it would go retest that low, and we didn't know. We had no forecast at that point for that specific thing to happen. But anyway, that specific thing did happen. So if that person, I was going to say, did have that insight, that was a good sort of call, you mm-hmm. know, even though mm-hmm. he wasn't calling it specifically.
Right.
I was wondering if he kind of was asking that because he felt that was going to be the case. And it was the case. The market did. In doing that, that actually changed and pushed forward, changed some of our outlook on the market. And so because of that break to new lows. And what that did is, number one, the call that we were making for the bottom on the 27th, 28th, and then the 18-point advance, that happened. But because they did what this fellow had asked about by going back down and breaking to 95, in our work that did change, that constituted a kind of a blow-through, if you would, if that word makes sense, of that particular bottom, and it now pushes it out. And obviously, had we been long, which we weren't at that point, but had we been long, we would have been stopped out. But now that brings today, July 29th, and Monday, the Friday-Monday combination thing, as the next important daily bottom. So there's two things of importance here. Number one, if today closes above 1291, and we're at 1292.50 right now, that actually is going to be a stronger position. And strangely enough, I won't say that. It would be the stronger position, and it would indicate, let's just say that, it would just indicate that that now that these events have happened, July 29th would be the next now reflected wave bottom here. Even if they close below it, but if they close above it, that's a stronger position, and then we would be looking to be long going into next week, you know, looking for long side positions. Today would be the on-time day for that, and Monday would be one day late. So the rest of the day is going to be important. In terms of the downside, I would have liked, you know, in our support and resistance panel, we have in today, we have, 1278 as a downside target, and they reached that, but my preference would have been to see at least 1276 get reached. Because they didn't do that, I'm a little hesitant on any new long position other than a sort of nano trade, because really that's kind of a natural level for the market for them to reach, and I'd like to see that before I would really be happy about being long. So in spite of the turning points and all that stuff, I'd like to see that level get tested at some point here. Even if they exceeded on the downside, I really would prefer to see 1276 touched and tested and then perhaps closed above. That would be much better for me to get excited about being long here. Then finally, this decline, if we do continue to go down, if there is, you know, because we have today and Monday, this ties in nicely with the longer-term quarterly top, which is still in play and ordinarily would be in play all the way through the rest of the year, meaning that we would look for a multi-quarter decline off that top. So we'll see how that plays out a little bit later today. Let's see if there's anything else. I think I did mention yesterday, and I think it's worth re-mentioning, that August 3rd is the next, after this turning point, August 3rd is next, and I know some of these are very close together, but that's another important date with, you know, sizable price movement in there for a reversal. So we'll talk about that as we get a little closer into next week. So let's see if there's anything else on the S&P that would be important. We have a number of indications for August 3rd, so keep that in mind. And I'm not sure what day that is. Is that Wednesday of next week?
It's Tuesday or Wednesday.
I don't have a calendar here.
Yeah.
Tuesday is the 2nd.
All these computers.
Wednesday. Okay, so Wednesday the 3rd. Okay.
All these screens. Tuesday is the 2nd? And
yes.
And you're talking about the 3rd. Is that right, David?
Yes, August 3rd.
All right.
So keep that in mind. That'll be a... we'll, of course, update everything as we get into that.
Now, at this point, do you have any ideas? Are you calling it to be a bottom, a top?
No, I haven't done that yet, but I just want to, I'm just mentioning the dates up front so people can kind of gear themselves towards, if they're going to take bigger positions or if they want to be more active in the market, certainly there's going to be moves into that date as well. There's big moves into and out of these cycles. So there will be a big move into that. Certainly we're underway right now with a big move, but it could be quite different than where we are at that point. So I would really start to, if I was going to trade into that cycle, I would trade into it starting next week, not today. You know, as we get a little bit closer to it, like within 2 days of it or so. Anyway, so that's interesting. And like I said before, the only other thing that I would have liked to have seen with this decline is 76. I know it doesn't sound like a lot to go from 78 to 76, but it's so normal for them to touch 76 under these conditions that, you know, I'd prefer to see that. That would give me some more comfort rather than, you know, seeing the 78 hanging there.
Kevin asked if you're looking for 1276 because of the gap to be filled or for a different reason.
Let's take a look. Is there a gap there? I'm not sure what that gap that he's referring to. Give me one more minute here. If it does fill a gap, it depends on, I think, if he's looking. I don't think there's a gap there except on the, because I'm using, you know, I do use Globex on the daily and larger charts. So there's no gap there that I see. So he might be looking at the ordinary S&P. Maybe he can clarify for us that about that gap.
Yeah, Kevin, exactly what
he's referring
to. Looking at there.
There is a little gap between on the regular S&P without, you know, the pit traded without the Globex, there is a small gap there. Is that what he's referring to?
I'm just waiting for him to type it back
okay.
in.
Okay, his question to us is that what we're talking about? It actually has nothing to do with the gap, but if he's, I just noticed it for the first time because I switched over to the S&P large contract.
He said, yeah, that's what you said, that's what he's talking about.
Okay, so he's talking, that's interesting. So here's a guy that's watching the, not the E-mini, but he's watching the non-Globex filled in daily chart. There's very few of that animal left out there. I thought I was the last one, you know, and because I really did for many, many years, I've just been watching the normal S&P. So on our charts, for anything daily and larger, I'm using the E-mini market, of course, but the Globex included, and there is no gap on the Globex. So yeah, you could consider the gap. That's just as valid. If that works for you, that's no problem at all. That actually could be the reason they would fill it. But 76 is a natural level during this time period. We've talked about that before, and I would like to see that get touched. When the market can't touch it, if it came closer to it, if it went down to 77 or 77.25 or something like that, then I could make the argument that that was kind of what we call a kiss, where it just barely touched it, and that implies buoyancy and strength. That actually, even though the market's declining, the fact that they can't touch that level actually means there's buoyancy in the market, and that it wants to, that subsequent to this, there'll be a big advance. So, but missing it by 2 points is a little bit bigger than I want to see. So I'm just mentioning that 76 is really the natural level for this decline. And I'd like to see it touched. So if it isn't, we'll deal with it one way or the other. So, Dwayne, any other ideas or concepts, questions that you want to talk about with regard to the S&P here?
Let me scroll through here.
Or from yourself, even, if not from listeners?
No, let's see. After the gap question. Here's a question. Is 1296 considered critical of the monthly close? 1296 equals the 16th square of 9 and also the 9th square of 12?
Wow, that's good stuff. I'm trying to... Let me just digest that for
a
second.
Fun with that.
The 16th square of 9 and the 19th square of 12. What he's doing, for people who don't know, is that the mathematical concept of a square where you square a number like 7 times 7 is 49, there is a body of work that suggests that the market moves from one square to the next, at least these mathematical squares. Mm-hmm. So you could take today's price level, like 1291, and figure out what square you're working in. This is GAN. This is sort of a GAN idea. And so what he just did is he went backwards and figured out that 1276 is a number, whether it's exactly that number or whether it has, you know, dot something, 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 that is the square of 12 and the square of whatever, 9 or whatever it was that he said. So there's two different squares lining up right at that level. So that's, you know, without him having heard us say anything about 1276, he might have been able to say whatever. What was this fellow's name?
Tom. It's 1296.
Tom.
1296.
So, yeah. So, 1296. He said.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought he was talking about the 1276 level we mentioned. But either way, so his 1296 would be important to him, no matter what, because he's looking at that type of work, which, you know, would imply that there's something important at 1296. I thought he was referring to the 76 that we're talking about, you know.
Maybe
that we'd like
he typed
to see
that in wrong, but Raymond has a question for you. He said, question for David,
okay.
Does he mean 1277 on the ES? So I think now you've brought up the question of, are you talking about the S&P cash market, or are you talking about the S&P?
I'm talking
mini?
The futures market, the okay. ES. We want to see 1276. We don't ever quote in cash unless we're really talking about the cash market.
Okay.
There are a number of techniques that use the cash and futures, you know, and there's some value in that. The difference between cash and futures, there's a whole thing called fair value, and you can read about it on the internet if you want to. But we don't quote cash figures. You can't trade the cash market other than buying individual stocks. And one of the whole purposes for the future market is that it allowed people, rather than having to buy all 500 individual stocks in order to place a bet, so to speak, on the whole market rather than an individual stock, it meant that they brought the futures market out. One of the reasons is that you could buy a single contract that represented the whole market, all 500 stocks. So now you own the entire market rather than having to buy zillions and zillions of dollars worth of individual stocks. So the futures markets serve a very powerful purpose in many cases. In this particular case, that allows you to own the entire S&P 500 group of stocks by simply purchasing one contract using leverage. So it's a really neat thing, and that's what we're trading. We're trading the movement of all 500 stocks. A lot of cross currents, you know, going on in there. But that's the deal here. So whether the squares that he was talking about were 1276, which I thought that's what he was talking about, that's nice to know that there's some other things pointing to that as an important level. And that's a good example of using multiple techniques to come up with a level that you might want to act upon. Remember, levels can be very important, but there's other things at work. The market might spike below that level, but if it closes above that level, and this is one of the things that we talked about so many times on this program, that close is honoring that level. And that phrase, honoring the level, is important to me because the market does have so many other things that need to be satisfied, that your one specific level may only show its hand, so to speak, at the close. the market might go down and fix some other numbers, touch some other numbers that it needs to touch, then come up and at the close back above that particular level, that natural level, and that is the market honoring that level. So there's a number of ways to honor a level, one of which is just to touch it. Yesterday, you know, we had the 18-point forecast advance to 13.13. They touched that level, and fair enough, that's honoring it. But if they do go down and do 76 and dip below that to some lower number and then pull it back up and close above it at the end of the day, that's also a form of honoring. The honoring meaning validating that that level is important, the market has recognized it, and that by closing above it, that leaves the market having satisfied that level and another number of levels below it, it leaves it in a good position to start looking for a reversal and long position. Tie that in with reflected wave. You have a reflected wave bottom there and all these other things, and you've got the start of a really good trade, a multi-day advance from there. So anyway, one thing I do want to also mention, this particular turn that we're talking about here would normally, this one that we're coming up with right now, would normally have an approximate 32-point advance. So,
are you talking about the one coming up on the third?
No, I'm actually talking about the bottom that we're putting in now.
Oh, okay.
And you see, this is the thing. If they had touched 76, I didn't really finish my whole sentence. I don't want to make it too confusing because it hadn't happened, but if it did happen, what I would be saying on your program is that as long as they close above 76, then we would look for a 32-point, roughly a 32-point advance off of the then current low. So if they did go to 76, then we would say that we'd be looking for it to go up to say 1308 in an advance, and that's quite tradable. You know, that's a nice size move. That's a multi-day advance that we'd be talking about. So I will. And I am very interested in watching this market into next week. And by the way, this has all the signs for one of the free trades. This is good enough. If they would touch 76, this would set up one of the free trades that Bert has been wondering why we haven't sent out.
Oh, man.
But there you are. And I'm sorry, Bert, that we haven't sent them. You know, there's so many things. I know you don't. But listen, I just want to say it. It's been odd to me because every one of them, we've had a number of really nice moves that we, you know, knew internally that the setups were there. But either they come in one day early, and I don't like to trade on the one day early, or they come in and they get real close to the price, but they don't quite touch the price, and I'd rather let that go, or a whole bunch of other little things that have happened. And it just goes to show that, you know, the market services all types of things, investors, and our particular approach, you know, I'm too much of a perfectionist, and I want it to be the way that I understand all the pieces to be there. And sometimes we'll get a whole bunch of them one after another, like we did recently, where we had almost 20 in a row. But, and then there's other periods where you just wait around and, you know, we get the phone calls. Hey, man, where's the free trades, man?
Right.
You know, well, we just, you know, we don't have them. And,
well, what I do know, and I always tell people, is once we do get something, you're very confident that it's going to happen. I mean, you're not just throwing things out there just to throw it out there.
No, the worst thing that can happen to me, I swear to you, the worst thing that can happen to me is not that I lose money, but that somebody that was believing in me lost money. I don't want that. I can't stand that idea. So you might lose money even if the trade runs to its target, and then I can say to myself, well, the trade ran to its target and maybe you didn't manage your trade properly. But I do feel that I don't want to be in a position where I give out bad trades. So I work hard to make sure that they're good. And once in a while, that's why we use risk management, because once in a while we'll be wrong, there'll be an inversion, something will happen, and we do need to protect ourselves. So I'm as careful as I've always been. I haven't increased my carefulness. Nothing's changed. I'm just not seeing what I normally would see more of. That's all. And I like the fact that in most cases the market does very easily give you all the pieces. And once in a while, it goes through a period where it doesn't, or it gives you a lot of the one-day earlies and stuff like that. We could take the one-day earlies. You know, those are aggressive, and we could give them out and say, if you want to be aggressive, this is what you do. But I think it's just cleaner just to wait for the higher probability stuff, and that just means we're not trading for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to make the argument that even through this period where we're not making those trades, somebody who's, you know, really banging around in the markets back and forth, not, you know, managing risk or just sort of trading off of their urges or basically mixing a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of their urges, I'm still going to end up, or a person doing these trades is going to end up better in the end than that guy. Because that kind of trading that he's doing doesn't pay off in the end. We know that. It may pay off for a period of time, but it doesn't in the end. What does pay off is waiting for high probability setups, whatever those are to you, however those set up, and trading those with risk management. That's what does pay off. And if you just will simply take me at my word that that's the whole game. High probability setups, risk management, and trade to the targets. If you can do that, you will be successful. Now, there's a lot of details sometimes to that, but part of what these free trades are trying to do is to show you that the numbers can be known, you can set up really good high probability trades, and always, no matter who you are, no matter what you do in the markets, calling the market, forecasting the market will always be easier than actually trading it and getting the money out of the market. That's the part that, you know, where people fail. That's where people will say, well, you know, yeah, it was a great call, but I got stopped out, or it was a great call and I took my position off real quick because I was worried. Any number of things. Because once you're in the market, you know, you're subject to all those urges and all that stuff that we've talked about so many times. So let's just review this one last thing on the S&P. We're right at a critical juncture going into August 1st, which is Monday, that this bottom, if we do by any chance happen to test 76, and possibly even if we don't, I would be very excited to, but if we do and close above it, I'd be very excited to trade this reversal that we're talking about. So we'll talk about it into Monday. We'll go from there. We'll see where it goes.
David, is today the on time date or is this one day early?
Well, for people, for Reflected Wave, today is the on time day.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a bottom, okay. And the people who are coming to our course on August 20th and 21st will see that this is the only bottom that would have been called. The 26th and 27th that we talked about, that had to do with a roadmap. As you recall, the roadmap, you know, a roadmap has a price move associated with it. We have called for a bottom and then an advance of 18 points. And, you know, they did exactly that, but they broke to new lows yesterday. The fellow who called or wrote in and said, you know, do you think it's going to go down? Whether he knew or not, it did go down and did the 1295, and that set Reflected Wave into motion for today. And so we're very close here between today and Monday to a very important bottom. Now, the only caveat to that, if, you know, if we break way, way down, if the news comes out and we're, you know, they're using this to break out on the downside and really start to affirm the quarterly chart, obviously that would be a blow through and we would be on to a much, much bigger decline from that point forward. Even interestingly, in Reflected Wave, even when the market wants to make a huge move or is about to make a huge move, it will still bounce 9 times out of 10, literally, at a Reflected Wave bottom, even if it intends later to go down substantially. It still gives you a bounce and you can still place a protective stop at a break even and do all those types of things. It rarely walks right through it. It can happen, but it's rare. And it has, and when it does happen, it tends to happen in markets that are not markets that have lots of cross currents in them, like an index or a Dow or a Russell or a NASDAQ. Something that doesn't have all those cross currents. Something that just has one way stuff going on. So anyway, let's watch that because we're inching in on a critical juncture with a very decent move, much larger than the 18 point thing that we talked about. All right. So, Bert, why don't you throw something in here? We haven't heard much from you. I can direct you to cough, but that's not a lot of information.
Yeah, Bert, could you just turn your head and cough, please?
Thanks. what can I throw at you guys? I don't have anything to throw at right now. I kind of feed off of you guys a little bit. I mean, my work is pretty much...
Are you in any?
I actually am long a little bit of the S&P here at about 1283. I'm trying to hang on and see if it sticks. I like the idea of being long down here. In fact, I actually like if David roadmap or not reflect the way bottom is actually validated here. What I would like, or what I would consider, is buying the August S&P 1320 calls, or the 1310 calls. It would be the 1320 calls are actually going for about 15 points. That's about $750 worth of total risk. It should give you enough of a time element to get there. I think if this low does stick, that we'll rally through actually 1308. I think actually we'll go to like 1320 something, and then we could fail from there. So I kind of, you know, just aside from just your work, David, my stuff does go long. And, you know, if you're going to take advantage of the daily calendar, you know, this bottom here, then that would be a very cheap way of having some representation.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because the maximum risk is like $750. That's one of the neat things about options, is that there's no further risk. You can only lose the amount that you pay for the option. It doesn't matter how far the market moves against you. The maximum that you're going to lose is the price you paid for the option. That's nice. That's kind of like having a built-in stop that's inherent in the instrument itself.
Yeah, perfect.
If you want, you know.
There's no margin requirement, so you're not, and there's no, you know, additional risk, you know, of something silly happening over the weekend. So it has its advantages. So you guys should consider that.
Okay. Well, and we may put that out as a trade. Again, I wish they would have done the 76. You know, this is just another example of what we've been talking about. It's all there except 76.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I'll definitely put it out. If we get there and I get the green light, that's probably what we'll do.
Okay.
Probably put it out in the form of an option so people can, you know, take advantage of it without having involved in the same risk as, you know, having on the contract.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, great. Let's see if there's anything else we can talk about today.
Somebody early on.
What about gold,
show,
David? You got anything?
Well, I'm just glad to see it's way up there. It's doing very well. I'm not in gold. I never had a position in gold for this whole advance. We did take a position at $17 a long time ago in silver, and I had suggested that we got out of a lot of it near 50, and as I did on the program. But in this fund that we trade, that we, you know, we stayed in it, and so now it's bounced back decently from the 32 low that it made. But no, gold. If I am going to have something in gold, let's just take a look.
Somebody's asking, David, did you say that?
I mean, personally,
that,
I'm glad. Kind of day trading it when it offers it, but.
Okay.
I still think, even though it keeps going, the risk is to the downside if something happens here.
So. One thing we've talked about for the people who trade fundamentally in news, you know, the greater the uncertainty, or the as uncertainty continues, the debt problem, this problem, that problem, these metals will continue to advance.
Right.
Even though silver is in a different position and a more bearish position overall, the fact is that uncertainty is going to keep this going, very much like the war kept the market rallying for a long time as well, because it was right in the news, it was on everybody's mind. And then as that faded away, now a new piece of news, new tension needs to be there for the market to rally through, that kind of thing. And the metals are rallying certainly on uncertainty. There's a lot of uncertainty about the stability of the economy and many, many other factors that I'm not aware of, but there's a lot of them out there. That uncertainty will keep the gold going. I'm not too afraid, but it just goes to show, in spite of that, we did have a really big decline in gold and in silver, particularly during that uncertainty. So that can happen. And those, you know, a long time ago, Michael Bork said these are, you know, it's an emotional market. I think that's the very best term I think you could find for gold and silver.
Yep.
They're very emotional markets. We have to give Michael Bork some credit.
From Bruce.
Much as I try to not give him credit, I think that was a good line.
Did you go into soybeans yet?
Hey.
Let's take a look here. Let's jump over to soybeans real quick.
Yeah, I was surprised that you guys couldn't hear me. But but I had my mic muted. Okay, so I thought you were just being rude.
I was surprised you didn't hear me, but my mic was muted. So.
Bruce had a question about gold. Daily high in gold yesterday, one day late? Question mark.
Is he referring to?
Did you say something about yesterday being a daily high in gold based on your stuff, or?
I don't remember. Let me take a look and see if there's something that stands out. That we may have. Well, yesterday was actually. 2 days ago they made a high, and I don't know that we. I don't remember what we said about that. We haven't had much to say about gold, but there may have been, and there was an indication, at least on this one chart for that, but I don't know exactly what I said. They had a move down. They're in a, what did they do? They went from 1627 down to 1603. They had a little pop down, and now they're retesting those. I will give anything really clear and obvious. We're in a trend here. Remember how we've talked about how trend followers are the people, when they get it right, they're the ones that make the most money.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there's no question about it. Of all different trading techniques involved, a person that really knows and understands how to do the trend following thing, when the markets move, those are the guys that, you know, that's where the home runs are made. Serious home runs. Big George Soros type of home runs. And George Soros is a trend follower at heart.
He's retiring.
He's looking for, well, and he may, I don't blame him.
Did you hear that? It's kind of a big news thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Right, Bert? He's not taking any more clients. He's only going to manage his family's money and sit around and smoke pot all day.
What is he, 80? 85 or something?
He's the oldest pothead in America. No, wait. Where does he live? No, he really is. He's been very pro that. But he's, he is a legend. I mean, this guy's done incredible things.
Yeah. No, he has. He's a guy, it bothers, that, you know, so going to politics, it bothers Republicans because he is able to go, he has a skill and an understanding of markets that is, I would have to say, profound. And I don't know that it's technical or not technical, news or not news. I don't know what he's really doing. I know he's been around technical people, and if you read that book, Market Wizards, you'll see that one of the traders worked for him for a number of years and told some interesting stories, one of which was where a bunch of his traders were long the Japanese yen, and the yen had a big move up, and they were all excited about that big move up, and they're all ready to take profits, and George came storming into the room. Mm-hmm. As I remember the story, George came storming into the room. They all wanted to take their profits, and he said, don't. Nobody take a profit here. I'll take over the whole position. I don't want anybody getting out of anything here. And so these guys were scratching their heads because they had made a big gain on it, and George wanted to hold the position. And subsequent to that, the market had, like, you know, a multi-month continued advance to dramatically higher prices. Mm-hmm. I'm sure these are true stories. The guy has a knack for... you know, that's an understatement, a knack for markets, like George, Warren Buffett has a knack for picking companies, you know, and finding people who, you know, companies that he believes in and he's happy about. I saw a TV program once with Warren Buffett. It wasn't that long ago, where he had bought a company in Malaysia or somewhere, and they showed him walking around the factory because he's investigating. And he got on the airplane, and he was sitting, and you could see to fly back, and he was so happy. Because it was kind of like how all of us deal with, you know, our short-term little trades. You know, everything lines up. You know, you've got the price level, you've got the time, you've got this, you've got that. All the dimensions are there, and you buy the market. You really love the fact that you're in the market because you know you got it right. And I saw that in him. He was sitting on the airplane, and he was just you could see he was just glowing. He had just paid, you know, I don't know, $600-700 million for a part of this company in Malaysia or whatever it was, large amount of money. And he was on that airplane. He was just sitting there. You could see it all came together for him. He knew the dance, and he was in it. And he was so happy to be at the dance. He bought that company. I remember thinking to myself, that's just like when it all comes together for us. You know, you love being in. It's like, I want to be here. He wasn't going home fidgeting, worried about his position, thinking, God, did I do the right thing? Or, you know, maybe it's not the right time or whatever. No, like I've said on the program so many times, you actually have great affection for the position. You have a really warm feeling about, you're very happy to be in. And I saw that in him. It looked to me like I could make that connection. Here's this guy that just dumped $600 million or whatever into this company, and he's on the airplane, and you could see he was just glowing. He just was the happiest guy because he knew his business, and he knew he got it right. Even though the results were not in yet, he was just glowing because he already knew he got it right.
Here's
so
a comment,
that was interesting. That was a lot of fun.
Comment from the chat room, and I read this too. Part of the reason that Soros is doing what he's doing is so that he does not have to comply with the reveal portion of the Dodd-Frank. And Bert, do you know what that means, really?
I don't, no.
Bert?
I don't either.
Okay, Michael, can you maybe in a couple sentences type in? Or you're welcome to step up to the mic. Actually, let me say that again. Anyone who ever wants to step up to the mic, rather than say that I'm not willing to ask David a hard question or something, you can ask.
No.
We say that over and over.
You can ask me the hard questions. Listen, I'm tired of listening to us.
Yeah.
Except for Bert. A Bert I'm not tired of. But Dwayne is killing me. God.
Oh, God, I know. I'm killing myself.
I wish they would call in. Let's wish together right now
calls. Guys, you can call, or you can just, if you have a headset, just say, hey, I'd like the mic, and all I got to do with the click of a button, I unmute you, and you can share anything you want. Even if you totally disagree, that's okay.
Yeah, it really is.
Just keep it clean.
Right. Otherwise, I'll mute you again. Family-owned funds exempt from critical provisions of Dodd-Frank. Okay, that's from Michael K. as well.
Okay.
So I don't really know what it is that the Dodd-Frank is forcing people to reveal.
And a big thing that Soros does is, or did, was hedge funds, which are also already exempt from a great deal of government scrutiny. So he had that freedom then. He's saying he's extending that into another area that I'm not aware of. So.
Okay. I'll study up on it maybe over the weekend. You know what I think I'm going to do over the weekend? Not that anybody asks or cares.
I care.
Well, I think... thank you, guys. I'm thinking about... Because my wife's on vacation, I'm thinking about reading The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh.
Great American novel. I've never read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't fully committed, but I am...
I like you have never read that book, and it's been around. You've heard it, we've heard it a million times, but we don't know a thing about it. We've never read it.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a good idea.
John Steinbeck wrote that, correct?
I don't know.
Okay. I think it is a John Steinbeck novel. How many people in the audience have read, or not, anybody out there read the book? Bruce has, yeah. And he said, yes, it is John Steinbeck.
Oh.
Thanks,
what
James.
What a talented audience we have. Seriously. The guy's read the book, knows the author.
So, required reading, according to Bruce. Okay, well, so, all right. Well, maybe that's exactly what I'll do. And I might even, rather than the whole ebook thing, maybe I'll just shuffle over to the library and get like a book you can hold in your hand and smell the pages.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to be able to, when I'm reading an electronic book, I seem to have a hard time staying focused the way I used to. Because growing up as a kid, I loved to read. I really did. And I would get so lost in a book. Like hours would go by, and I would be all of a sudden I would snap out of it and go like, oh my goodness, where did the time go? I really, really got into reading the story and the characters and the plot and everything. And I've not had that experience since I began reading electronic books. I don't know why. All right. Okay.
That's a great point, Dwayne. That's a good point. I just want to mention to you that I've missed that thing, the physical page thing, the smell of the book, you know, that you actually have something in your hands and that you're physically close to it. I can really see that. I could really, you know, connect with you on that.
Okay. Michael says that Soros explained that new regulations under the Dodd-Frank Act would have required the fund to register with the SEC if it continued to invest money for outsiders. He'd rather just limit the fund to family and his philanthropic endowment.
Okay.
So.
There you are.
Okay. Now, Ryan, your question, and I brought this chart up specifically for you. The trade setup that you're looking for is this pullback right here to 1292. Okay. Yeah, that's what you're looking for, Ryan. The only thing you got to keep an eye on is this indicator down here. It's potentially running its course prior to that, but don't let that run you off if you like the trade, because over here we got the short, the exact same thing in reverse, and notice how long this stayed buried the whole way down, and you just kept getting re-entries. You know, you could take some points and just re-enter this thing. So, yeah, that's where the entry is on that. And the same thing on the YM, Ryan. It's right here. Okay. And so, I mean, it's just a trade. That's all. But you can see we had the same thing coming down. Entry after entry after entry after entry until it started. Oh, now it's starting to turn around. And that all ties in to what we got going on the hourly over here. We had our white candles. Had a red, had a blue. Thanks, Michael. I'll try to copy that link and put it on the blog tonight. Michael K is providing us with a link to the whole Soros thing.
Oh, good.
And I'll put that on the blog tonight. So, guys, we had, remember, blue, white, red. Now red, white. Now we're getting some serious blue here. So, David, now you really wanted to, you would have felt more comfortable if this thing went down and touched 77.76, and you said without
well,
that...
Well, for our setup for a okay. free trade and for a roadmap, yes. But in spite of that, I'm telling it to the listeners that the bottom that would be due today or Monday would, for the 32-point advance and all that, I would just prefer to see the 76. That fits in. That's one of the components that I like to see.
Does that mean you would not be interested in taking a small, long trade in this area here where we are now?
Well, I mean, intraday, I wouldn't mind taking. No, I wouldn't block me from taking a
okay.
long trade.
All right. Okay.
It would block me right now. Not. I can't say for sure, but it would block me from potentially putting a trade on today as a multi-day trade where I'm in it for several days,
right.
because I don't want to sit through another test of 76 or whatever. If they were going to do that, I would prefer to see that first.
Gotcha.
Once we get past Monday, however. If they haven't done 76, then I would, if we still have room to get in the trade at that point, if they still haven't done it, then I would seriously consider getting into it. But and I don't want to freak people who might, you know, freak people out because, well, you know, this guy, David, said, you know, it's not going to be a good position unless it goes down to 76. I really am only saying that that's the final piece for me that would really put it perfectly into harmony. You know, all three dimensions would be have done all the things they need to do so that the principle that's at work that would force the market to move up would be, you know, I could be Warren Buffett and I can sit on the airplane smiling because I know I have it all in place.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And I do take trades sometimes when it's not all in place. Go ahead, Bert.
I was going to say, that's a longer time frame, so you can have smaller time frame setups and
yes,
larger time frames.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Ain't no two darn ways about it.
Early on at the beginning of the broadcast, someone had asked the question or made the statement. It said, hang on.
David, nice crude trade.
Oh, yeah, with the decline.
And the $4 decline off then the current high, which was $99, and we hit 95.
See, I told you I'm good. I keep trying to tell you, Bert.
And modest.
Yeah.
we'll talk about the crude thing real quick in a minute here, but what were you – somebody was calculating
somebody,
something.
I can't find their factor, but they wanted to know, they thought you were going to give some information today regarding the treasuries. And I have that chart up if you have some comment you want to make on that.
It was like
yesterday you said, hey, tomorrow, guys, I'm going to have something potentially important on the treasuries.
Oh, okay, on the treasuries.
I've got an hourly chart up. I can go to daily if you want.
Let me just look. If it doesn't jump out at me, because I know I said that yesterday, and there was something important due in the treasuries. I'm trying to see which. Honestly, I've got about 8 charts up on the treasuries, and I'm just going through them. So give me just a minute here.
I'm on the 30-year, but I can change that as well.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Here's what it was.
I can go to an ordinary-looking chart too, if that's what you prefer.
Yeah. No, that's okay. That's okay. Remember we talked about the 27th and 28th being important not in reflected wave, but this was for the movement off of for the S&P as an example, for a bottom at the 18-point advance, and then they subsequently broke to new lows, etc. The same type of thing was happening in the Treasury market, and they invalidated it. The kind of thing that I was thinking about trading, they invalidated that by getting above a certain level today. So I wouldn't, now I would want to wait till, here's that date again, August 3rd, before I would potentially, I might actually have a trade into August 3rd, but right now, that thing that we talked about yesterday would not be valid. This would not have been a trade that we would have even most likely entered yet. But the market is substantially higher. They've had a really good run-up today on the S&P's decline. And I think that August 3rd would be the next big daily setup that we would have. So you might want to just write that down so that we can put something together on that coming into that day.
Yeah,
I don't trade David? Treasuries. What's this move worth, like this move we've seen today?
Well, we're up 1/32nd.
Okay.
Is worth $31.25. So the bond market, where am I here? Bonds. Bonds are up 1.20 seconds. So she's up, let's say
about
you came
50.
In long, you're up about $1,600.
Yeah, 1562.
On one contract.
On one contract. Right.
And
yeah.
What's
bond market
the margin
moves.
Requirements for the bonds?
Stay with me and I will find out.
I know that song.
I can name that tune. I'm looking it up. That's why I was playing you the background right. music. Again, I was trying to be funny. It wasn't working.
No,
it works. You got my attention.
Margin requirements, left click. Let's go to financial survey says $2,970. Nice bang for your buck.
Okay, now, is that an intraday margin?
No, that's initial, so that's to hold it overnight.
Okay.
Just cut it in half,
okay.
And that'll be your day trade margin.
Okay. So, roughly about the same as beans?
Actually, cheaper than beans.
Cheaper than beans, okay.
That's great.
Now, today is a big day for the bonds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Regularly, you might see from high to low, you might see a full point. 3/4 of a point. In monetary terms, it'd be, $1,000 to about $750. Today is just an explosive day because the market's down and you got a flight to quality going on. You got some seasonal tendencies going on there too. So.
And that movie floored the guy who ran the little cigar store right outside of the exchange. When he spoke about the bond traders, there was something. They were like different than the other traders, and
mm-hmm.
the bond traders get off at like 2:00 or whatever time the bond market closes. And he says, I would
mm-hmm.
sit here behind the counter and I would watch them as they exited the building, and he said you could tell instantly if they'd had a good day, a bad day. It wasn't like just a bunch of people, you know, the whistle blew and we clock out and go home. He goes, it was very emotional, it was written on their face, it was just, it was palpable what had happened in that bond pit over the course of the day. And this is just the cigar guy making this observation. I don't mean just the cigar guy, but it was the guy who's, he's not
on the floor,
he's not trading.
Just an outsider standing there, he can see clearly what they're... Listen, for all the things that the pit traders have, their advantages, it's really a rough life. It's a tough-as-nails rough life to do that. And, so, and some of these guys just loved it and adored it, and it's gone, and technology took it away, like technology is taking books away and all that. It's just, it's how we advance. You know, that's just what it is. But it's a great, I think I might have seen that movie. I saw something with the whole story about the demise of the floor traders and the people that were in their nice homes and all the stuff that we've talked about the other day.
I think, David, you might have seen the one that was on the History Channel.
Yeah, that's what I think I saw.
Yeah, this is floored. This is different. I mean, it's the same storyline, but it's going to have different people and different interviews. And there's a lot of foul language. I've said this a few times, guys. It's not a family movie. And if you're offended by foul language, you probably don't want to watch it because these guys are pretty crude. But it's visceral watching and listening. And, I mean, if you're a trader, I think you should watch it. I think you should know the history. Even though we're electronic traders now, I think it's important that you understand how this all came to be. And it talks about how it was a really interesting part of it about where it talks about how the exchanges even came to be and who the locals are and how there were people that would come in with their own money and provide liquidity for the markets. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's good, and you can watch it for free on Netflix if you have Netflix. So
that's great. Okay, well, Dwayne, if you want, let's just one last thing. Let's run over to the crude market. Let's take a quick look at that. We do have several things that have already happened, and I have a couple things coming up.
Bert, can you help me with a symbol GCQ?
GCLU.
GCLU. Okay.
Bert, I was kind of surprised you remembered that call for the crude.
Well, I remember that because I was a little bit short there. So.
Oh, well, good.
I did it in the form of a spread. It was actually short Dece 11, long June 12.
Oh, okay.
So it's,
it took a few days to get this thing underway, but they did do it. We had, referring to this, we had talked about
hourly,
last week.
Daily? How can I help you here?
Go to daily.
Daily, okay. There we go.
And yeah, you can. Yeah, boy, that looks a lot different than mine. I don't know why.
Okay, let me do this. Let me just pop over to this chart, and I'll make it look more like what you're used to seeing.
Okay.
GCLU1. Okay. Is that better?
Is that daily?
That is. No.
Oh, that doesn't look anything like the crude market.
All right, let's go daily.
There you go. That looks like daily.
All right, let me shrink it down now.
Okay, that's really good. Okay, so back around the 20th or maybe the 21st of July, remember we were talking about the dates of July 22nd being important in a group of markets, and one of those markets was definitely the crude market. And we had forecast that the market would top on July 22nd and that under normal conditions it would have an initial two-point decline and then a bounce, perhaps, and then a continued move of $4 off the then current high. And just like is so typical in markets, it did make a top on July 22nd. It then retested that top on July 26th at $100.62. And then if you were to subtract $4 from that, it would take you down to $96 and change. And we're right now at $95.73. So this market has done, this is a roadmap. This is a classic great version or very easy to follow version of a roadmap where we're calling for a date for a top and a specific amount of price movement that would the market would go down. The reason the market, it when the roadmap is done correctly, the reason the market goes down is because it is servicing a principle that the three-dimensionality of the markets dictates, so to speak, that on July 22nd, there's a top, there's a turning point. That's one portion of it, but that's only the time portion of the three-dimensionality, and then the other two dimensions are in a position that have to be, it's kind of like I've said before, it's kind of like karma, where there's a debt that has to be paid, right? You know, karma meaning the thing, what comes around goes around. The markets kind of exhibit a form of karmic quality where something has to be paid for, and it's paid in the form of price movement. So there's a reason, and like I said yesterday, even though the future did happen that the market went down 4 points, there is a way you can think about this where we're really not necessarily predicting the future. This is happening because of something that occurred in the past, because the three dimensions got out of, into a position is a better way of putting it, where price would have to be the one dimension that satisfies the other two. That's not always the case. But in this particular case, that's what I'm saying, that this takes, these take time to set up. This one requires, would require a $4+ move to satisfy. And here it is, and it goes down. This particular one you'd have to sit through for 4 or 5 days to get the full move. What is a dollar worth in that market, Bert? Okay, well, fair enough.
I think it's 100. Wait a minute. No. 100.
I think a dollar is worth...
1,000?
It might be $1,000. One of the people would know. One of our listeners
somebody,
would know.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room, if you
anyway,
type that
it's
in.
A nice example of that, and we'll have another setup in crude, at least off of this particular run around August 4th.
Dan thinks it's 1,000.
It's 1,000? Okay, thank you for that. Anyway, so this is another one of these setups that this one actually was correct, and we could have and should have sent this out as a, there was nothing really wrong with this. They did the July 22nd top, and, you know, they did the move, but for whatever reason, we didn't send it out. But that's a good example of just an ordinary roadmap. And I think for today, that probably, Dwayne, covers just about everything we have. Remember, with regard to crude, that we're looking for the month of July to mark a bottom. It's already happened. The bottom on your monthly chart would show last month as the bottom, but this is the on-time month for a low in crude for a multi-month advance. So if you're into stocks, and like we do own some Chevron and some one of the other stocks.
So you're saying back here in June would be the 1 month early?
That would be the 1 month early. But the thing I like about this is that if people want to, once we get a little further into August, because we're almost done with July here, you know, we can talk about, you know, starting to look at those stocks, because those oil stocks will want to move in concert with the move up here. And so I don't have the oil stocks up in front of me, but this is one of the things you can do with the futures market and the stock market, is you can play your stocks against the commodity that is fundamental to that stock. So I really like the oil stocks. We've owned two or three of them for a number of years here. And, you know, we basically started with a larger position, and we have not added to it at any point. We've just been peeling the position off as the market goes up and living through the drawdowns. You know, that's sometimes just how, you know, the pullbacks. But we trade that differently, obviously, that we're not really day trading or even weekly trading in those. We're really holding for much, much bigger swings. So we'll see how the market ends up as at the end of the month. We'll talk about this into next month. For those of you who are stock traders, this would be an interesting time. We'll take a look at those stocks and see if there's some good entries. And for those of you who, again, forgive the sales pitch, but if those of you, well, this isn't a sales pitch. For those of you who are coming, who have already signed up to come to the Reflected Wave Seminar on August 20th, you'll see how beautifully this works with stocks. It's just, it's perfect. It's just, the stocks are really, really good. The wide, wide number of them, there's thousands and thousands of stocks, but so many of them are perfectly suited for this type of trading. And I do like the idea, and something for you to consider is always, you know, look at the, buy stocks that are related to commodities, and you can make better predictions on those stocks. Because when that commodity, if that stock is a company that makes soybean curd, as an example, you know, just something to say that's the product, mm-hmm. and it's a big company and they rely heavily on soybeans, then, you know, let's do some forecasting on the soybean market, and we can tie that together with your stock purchase of that particular company. So that's one thing. A lot of people do that. That's no new original idea. People who have insight into the, you know, electronics market or whatever, they'll buy a stock that they understand, and they understand that market. But you can do that with the commodities and the stocks, and so it helps you put together a better trade. And I like the stocks for another reason, is that they're sort of in the background, and our friend Michael Z, he trades really preposterously sized positions in stocks like Apple and other stocks that he'll just hold, and he'll trade around that position. So there you go. If you want to come, oh, by the way, we're having our last webinar on the reflected wave. If you want to come, you may have heard it before, but if you just want to come for anyway, just show up on Wednesday, and we'll send out a reminder. You can sign up for it on our blog, which Dwayne was showing you there.
Go to pagetrader.com. And I just sent a link out to everyone in the room. So if you just click that link right now, it'll go ahead and pop you over, and you can register. And
right. And there's no charge. You just come in and take a look, and I'll go over into more detail what it can do for you. I love Turning Points. They've done a lot. I mean, this made one of the biggest differences in my trading, and I believe that anybody who understands this technique and applies it would have a tough time arguing that it's not extremely valuable to know. And it helps you have more confidence in a trade, especially once you get past the on-time day. You know, you just have it makes trading a lot easier. So there's a lot of other little factors that I talk about at the seminars regarding price and how what we've talked about so many times. The important turns occur at important prices, and you'll learn to put all that together. It's very easy to do. It's not a difficult thing, and it's all automated for you so that you don't have to do calculations on your own. So consider that. And let me think if there's anything else that we can cover today, Dwayne.
Well, what I'd like, if you can look at my screen, David, real quick.
I am.
I was pointing this out for Ryan, one of the guys who's in the...
To do the buy.
In the thing. Yeah, see, this was the entry that I showed you that where we would pull back to that price was actually 12,130. And price popped up so far to 12,158. So that's
very nice.
28 points in the Dow, which is equivalent to 2.8 points or 3 points in the one, in the ES. And I think you can see, David, I know this is an odd chart for you because you don't do volume charts. You do time-based charts. But, I mean, the way this thing can trend and just give you, like, multiple entries and a move.
Yes.
It's just, you know, I think if you can find a little time to look at it, I think you'll find that it's one of the markets you'll like to refer to a lot. Because I think it's easier for people to.
You've said that before. The YM would be good.
I really think so. In fact, let me put it on a. Let me pop it over to an hourly. Well, that looks all. That's not pretty. Let me shrink it down. Get rid of this. What's a smaller time frame that you look at? You look at 5 minutes sometimes.
What are you looking at there?
That's
that hourly.
That's an hourly. Yeah.
You could go to a 15-minute, perhaps.
Let's do that. Okay, there's a 15-minute chart. Don't know if that if my stuff that's on here makes it hard for you to see. I can take that off.
No, you're fine. I'm staring right at it.
Okay.
Looks good.
So, I mean, here on a 15-minute, we have our same thing. It's just basically, you know, the bullish cross, the pullback to our BBC. And then, of course, because you're on a 15-minute chart, I mean, you got to be able to take a little heat across here. But then the move's there, and you get, you know, there's some profit to be had. And over here, coming down, you know, you caught a very nice move there. One thing I do want to say is that because this, we talked about this last night in the community workshop at length. So if you're a partner, you can go and watch that video. This white candle business that we use for potential change of trend, it looks back a certain number of bars, and so periodically you have to refresh your chart so that it goes back to the default look back. And I don't want to get too complicated with the explanation, but what I have to do sometimes to make my chart go back to the default look back so I get an accurate picture is I have to change the time frame. And for whatever reason, I started just flipping it to a 15 so that I could then switch it back to an hour to go back to the default look back and not the entire day. And this 15-minute chart, I very well may start treating that because I've never traded off a 15-minute chart, but I see some stuff that I can really kind of put to use. And now a 15-minute chart, that's something you look at pretty regularly, right, David?
I do. I happen to, you know, it depends on what the market is expressing itself on, but I don't use any one chart consistently across all time frames.
Sure.
I mean, it's consistently across all time, but 15 is definitely a chart that we look at, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, here we go from red to white to blue, and then here's a beautiful move from 99 to 1311. And then here from this 1308. I mean, and so, and this is not going to show up on my hourly, but I can look at my hourly and then I can look at my 15. I can go, and then I just pop back over to my hourly here, and there I am, you know. And so, based on this, our backdrop now is bullish, okay. And so that was what led us into that YM trade that I was showing Ryan and anyone else that follows us and know kind of what our stuff looks like and what it is we're looking for. I mean, that is what we look for.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway. Yeah, David, I think you'll come back and go, wow, that YM, I like that.
Well, good. I definitely will put that up over the weekend here. Anyway, so I'm excited about next week. We've had, for us, with the free trades, it's been somewhat of a slow week, but there's enough out there, and there certainly is going to be more markets that we're looking at and getting comfortable with where we'll be able to increase the number of trades. And I do want to suggest to people that even if you a lot of times futures brokers don't deal with stocks. I mean, that's a specialty.
Mm-hmm.
That's a separate thing. And you would need two separate accounts. But I really want to suggest to people that they consider stocks and matching, sort of mixing the two together. Sometimes you might have a period where both your stock and your futures trading is doing very well. Sometimes one might not be doing as well as the other, but the other one sort of helps makes up. There's all kinds of things like that that can happen. And our trader friend, Michael Z, that trades in the large contracts, he has a big number of stocks a big number of shares that he owns in a relatively small number of stocks that he uses as a backdrop to his trading. So something for you to consider. Longer-term positions that you're holding in stocks, and you just hang on to them while, you know, if you're using, as an example, a reflected wave bottom, the monthly bottom, and you buy that and you're going to be in for several months, you know, you're looking for a three-month advance, fair enough. You're in that stock, and you're trading your futures positions around that while that's working for you. And lo and behold, a month or two goes by, those stocks are in a much higher price, and you're able to book that, and that's just something that's working for you day by day off of these longer-term tops and bottoms. And I really do like, and I just want to say this, that the value of, you know, the short-term trading is very fun, and it's there every day for you. The longer-term is also very, very valuable to consider, because it will work every day for you, not in the exact same way, but over a period of time, there is a payday at the end. Several years ago, we sent Dwayne a, you know, statement showing a large, you know, $400,000+ in a year out of a trading account that we just traded stocks in alone. And that kind of dollar volume where you're saying, well, that, yeah, and we had a lot of stocks, but that kind of dollar volume is generated from larger swings. We're not going to generate that by getting in and out of stocks, you know, and trading for 1 or 2 days. We're in for obviously much larger swings. So we use that in the background. That's something that's constantly working in the background while we're trading in the futures market. So I really would think that would be something you should consider. And over time, the stock market tends to go up. I mean, right now, we still have some potential on the upside, even though the rest of this year, as we've talked about, right now for us, the normal position is for sideways to lower. But that doesn't mean that an individual stock can't go up, you know, during that time. You can always be in stocks that are going up even while the general market goes down. And nothing stops you from shorting stocks as well. There is a procedure for it, but you can short stocks and bet on the downside as well. Markets are a lot of fun.
Yeah, the only thing is with the with as you get into stocks, you have to be aware of the pattern day trader rule, which requires that you have minimum account balances if you're going to have more than, I think it's 3 round turns in a week, I think is the cutoff point for that. I haven't actively traded on, but I, you know, I've been looking at some stock charts and, you know, hey Bert, are you still with us? Bert? Okay. Because I know at one point there was some discussion that we might, there might be a possibility we were going to have equity access through the DT Pro platform, but I don't know if that was kiboshed or still in the works or not. And Bill, you ask a question, can't you trade the YM from ES signals? The answer to that is yes. And you say you've done it with good results, and then so I say if that works well for you, then by all means. For some people, it's a confusing concept that they're going to look at one thing in order to trade something else. But yes, it can be done, and if it's working for you, then by all means, anything that's working for you. Yeah, if it's the I Ching, if it's working, I mean, use it. No, I'm serious.
That's great. I love that.
But well, oftentimes, and here's how I use that type of thing, Bill, is if let's say the YM is not quite to one of our weekly zones, but the ES has already hit it and started to bounce, then I know that sometimes that YM will actually turn up and move along with the ES, and so maybe we come 5 or 10 points shy hitting the zone on the YM, things like that. So actually, I guess I do use that to a degree. I do. So... Do you ever do that, okay, David? Well, do you ever look at one market to actually put on a trade in another market? Is that any?
Do I look at one market to put a trade on in another?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much so. We do that with regard to our turning points. You know, where we check the dates on other markets, like I've talked about a number of times, and that's essentially what you're talking about. I mean, that's our way of doing it.
Okay. Very good.
Well, Dwayne, I think that's for today. That's about it. It's a pleasure to be on again, and I will. I'm looking forward to next week. I think this is there's a lot of good stuff here, and of course, we'll get the news. I don't know when the debt thing is going to happen, but they'll come out with it. Just remember that we're at a critical juncture on the downside now, and you know, the initial move from this, all the stuff we talked about earlier. I don't have it in front of me, so I don't have it all.
I would caution folks about
being in front of that.
Positions open over the weekend, because they could come out with some kind of an announcement over the weekend. Good, bad, indifferent, who knows? But the open Sunday night, I mean, there could be some huge gap, and there, you know, I'm just saying, if you know, be careful. That's all.
That's a good suggestion. If you're not playing, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, or you know, if you know what you're doing, you won't be in over the weekend. That's a better way of putting it. Just let them have this, and then you can take advantage of the remaining move or other moves after that, because you can if you're on the wrong side, it could open up dramatically against you, and stops could be slipped, and all kinds of things could happen.
Okay.
So there you are.
All right. Well, David, you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Dwayne. And you guys, too. I love the good questions from the audience. And we got a lot of people that think well in the audience. You know, they've thought stuff through. They ask good questions. We've got people from many, many different diverse backgrounds, one of which used to be an IRS tax attorney. I mean, seriously, people from all kinds
all
of walks of
life. You know, and it's so rare that I let my cage get truly rattled, and I did a little bit today, and so for that, you know, I have a little bit of regret and remorse, because any time I don't manage to stay in full control of my emotions. And I'm a little disappointed in myself, you know. So, whatever.
There's nothing to be disappointed about. I'm human. You know, so that's just
I'm about as human as they get.
What's that?
I said I'm about as human as they get.
Yeah. And you're very transparent. We love that about you.
Almost invisible. Now, this pullback here on this ES, unlike that YM, I'm concerned about this and the ability to bounce. The bounce may be to right here, so that's tradable if someone's interested in that. And for Ryan, for your benefit, if you're wondering about that, because you originally asked me to bring up this particular chart, and it just took too long for this to happen. And so now the cycle kind of wants to maybe come back down and test this. But we'll see. I'll leave this chart up running for you guys. And David, have a great weekend. I will see you on
Thank Monday. You, Dwayne. Okay, I'll plan on seeing you then. All Thanks right, so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, that's going to do it for another day, another week. Now, this is the weekend, so I want you to turn off your computer, turn off your monitor. I want to encourage you to spend some quality time with your family, okay? Markets are important. It's how we pay our bills. It's how we build our retirement, how, you know, all of that. But your family, your loved ones, that's really important, you know? So set aside some time for them. Spend time with them. Obviously, I'll see you all in church on Sunday, right? But thank you so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.